Are you an audiobook narrator? Have you ever submitted an audition on ACX? And if you have you ever wondered what it's like behind the curtain that ACX puts between you and the authors? Like, what happens after you submit your audition? How many auditions did they receive? How did they choose a narrator? And did they select per finished hour or royalty share? And why? I'm Greg Thomas, and I'm going to be interviewing Tyler Dahl. He's the co-author of a novel called The Compatibility Code. He posted his book on ACX, accepted auditions, chose a narrator, and had his book produced. And in this interview, Tyler is going to pull the curtain back and let us see inside and let us know what things look like from the author's point of view when they post their book on ACX. Tyler, thank you for taking time for this interview and giving us some insights that are very, very hard for us narrators to come by. So tell us about the compatibility code. My audiobook narrator friends will want to know that it's a novel, so it's fiction, and it's a little over 5 hours long, but what's the book about?
Yeah, sure. So appreciate you reaching out to me and taking the interview here, and hope that the information is good for you. So my book, my novel is about, it's a sci-fi book, and it is a action-packed, fast-paced, space-traveling family feud, double crossing, intergalactic planetary Marine Corps adventure. So if you could put all those things into a ball, shake it up, and then throw it out there for readers to read, that's pretty much what they're going to get. So it kind of starts out with laying the foundation of how the human race got to a point in technological advancements to actually change their race into something more advanced. And then that led to a domino effect of them needing to spread their wings to other planets, landing on other planets. And then it kind of traces the family feud between the two brothers that kind of were the underlying pioneers of that technology that enabled all of that to happen. And then laced in there, there's a handful of other characters that spice up the plot.
Indeed. And you mentioned a Marine. I know that you're a former Marine yourself, although it's kind of like once a Marine, always a Marine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I did 8 years in the Marine Corps, and it's always close to my heart. So I like to try and lace somewhere or another, and anything that I do somehow tie it back to the Marine Corps. So I took the indulgence of creating a character that shared some of my qualities, both good and bad, in the plot. So yeah, turned out pretty good.
Yeah, and it's and the Marine influence is definitely there. And I listened to the audiobook myself, and you can't call it a page turner because there aren't any pages in an audiobook, but it's definitely that kind of listener, that kind of read. It really picks up from page one and just goes. And I was really impressed with the way you wrote it and your writing style. Is this your first book?
Yeah, actually it is. It's my first published novel. I've tinkered with writing here and there and have begun writing my own manuscripts, but just never really followed through with it until I landed on this one and just kind of told myself, you know what, let's stay focused and push through on it and check that box on the bucket list, which is now more than just a bucket list item. But yeah, that's kind of what pushed me to do it. I've always been interested in it and wanted to actually get one published as a bucket list item. And now that I've done it once, it's let's keep this going.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on getting your first one published. And there's more on the way from what I understand.
Yeah.
So now you had a co-author on this book, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. So one of my coworkers at my main job, my main gig, I was sharing with him some of the scenes in the book, and he was like, oh, hey, you should do this or have that character do that or make this twist in the plot. And I was like, you know what? How about not? How about you write that scene? And how about you craft up that plot twist? And so then, I was probably about a quarter of the way, maybe halfway through my manuscript when that happened. And then I would send over a chapter to him to write because he had the kind of the creative writing idea for that particular scene. And to his surprise, he and really to my surprise too, he actually had some skills in writing as well. And so we created some synergy there and we moved forward with the project by kind of bouncing things back and forth and creating the plot that that ultimately ended up in the published manuscript.
Well, it worked really well because from a listener's point of view, I could not tell when one person was writing versus the other person was writing. So that's very, you know, you guys blended together very, very well.
Yeah, and I'd have to say that we worked really hard at kind of not rewriting, but like editing each other's stuff. And so we actually used Google Docs as a collaborative platform, and so we were actually on our computers writing at the same time a lot of nights. And so, you know, he or I would type up a paragraph and be like, "Hey, go read this and tell me what it sounds like." And then, you know, right there in the collaborative document, you know, we can see each other's cursors and you can manipulate each other's words and stuff like that. So while it was two brains, two people typing, we were a collective single conscious working on the document. So it was really cool.
That's really neat. Well, as I've said before, ain't technology wonderful? Now, who's the publisher? Did you get a big publishing house? Did you self-publish? How did all that work?
So I did not go out and, you know, go to any particular company and say, "Hey, help me publish this." What I actually did was I came across Kindle Direct as a publishing, like a self-publishing platform. And so I don't know if you say Kindle Direct is the publisher or not. I don't know how that legality works. But basically, I like to tie back to saying that I self-published on Kindle Direct and on ACX. And on Kindle Direct, even though the word is Kindle, you can publish hard copy books there as well. So the platform that I used was Kindle Direct Publishing. And through that, I think they actually refer to that as kind of self-publishing. Now, they offer services to where, you know, they can do, you know, one line, two line editing for plot and for grammar and things like that. But me and my co-author decided to go with the low overhead approach and just kind of write and then have some of our buddies that are somewhat smart with grammar and things kind of edit it for us. And so what you see out there is actually 100% true, raw, self-published novel, having not hired any professional editing or publishing companies.
Great. And of course, with the Kindle platform, as I understand it, then, so you've got hard copies on Amazon, and then you've got soft copies on Kindle, and then you've got the audiobook version that people can download from Audible. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And I don't remember all the specific details, but I believe somewhere in the middle of all that, there was some agreements where we would agree to sell Kindle and the hard copies all on Amazon and Kindle for a certain period of time. And, you know, it was nominal agreements there. And then, of course, ACX also ties really well into the Kindle and the Amazon platform. So when you go to Amazon and you search it, which is typically where I point people to when they ask, "Where can I get my book?" I say, "Hey, just go to Amazon and type in Tyler Dahl, D-A-H-L, and my name will pop up."
And you mentioned ACX, but as much as we narrators would love every book to have an audiobook version, they all don't. Not all of them do. And so what was it that led you to want to get an audiobook version as well as print and Kindle?
Sure. So a couple of things. When I was researching just publishing, you know, because initially you land on, oh, go to these people and they will, you know, you hire them and they do their editing and publishing and it's all high overhead, right? So I was like, well, how am I going to ever turn around money on this thing? I mean, it's my first novel and probably is going to be one of, you know, trillions of books out there. So while a publishing company would help me do that, I don't know that that would actually be financially feasible. Because if you look into the cost, it was for a first time published author, it was kind of steep. So, what I came across in terms of removing that obstacle was, hey, put it out on as many platforms as you can if you're going to self-publish, right? And then self-market yourself on the different social medias for that. Because what it was telling me was that readers like to have options. And one of the growing areas, probably been growing for a while, but at least when I came in, it was pitched as being a fast-growing market, was the audio thing. You know, people have long commutes these days. People sometimes they fall asleep because they're looking at a book, but if they're listening on their earbuds while they're doing house chores, they can get through books faster. So it's just more convenient, right? I mean, we live in a world now where convenience is almost a currency. It's almost as valuable as money is, right? So I wanted to make sure that my novel, or I should say our novel, mine and my co-author's novel, was available in every possible venue. So that's what got me on the path of looking at audio. You know, research told me to basically do it so I can get more sales. And so from there, I found that it actually wasn't that expensive. Because initially I was like, oh, okay, yeah, but that's going to be super expensive, just like publishing was. But then, of course, I came across ACX and the different ways that you can, you know, find a narrator and how to pay for it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually not as bad as I thought. I mean, it can be expensive if you want to go get somebody that narrates for Stephen King. But, you know, if you're just starting out, then there's options for us little guys to be able to get an audiobook written within, you know, a budget that's affordable for us. So that's how I ended up at ACX and the payment options or the cost structure, I should say, for it, that ACX provides was extremely feasible for me as a starting out author.
Okay, well, let's talk about ACX for a little bit then. How difficult or time-consuming was it for you as a first-time author to actually set up your profile on ACX and post the excerpt from your book and get the auditions coming in? How difficult was just kind of the first-time process to get started on ACX?
So I'm going to say that it was actually really easy, like stupid easy. I had just got done going through all of the rigmarole for Kindle Direct Publishing for the Kindle version and the paper version. And so I had already had, you know, the various different formatted scripts and this, that, and the other that are required after you even set up an account with ACX. So, you know, setting up an account with ACX, to be more specific to that question that you said, it's not hard. I mean, anyone and everyone sets up accounts with numerous different companies. So it's not any easier or any harder than any other company. Once you get in the door, you know, to go on to your next couple of questions, which was, you know, how hard was it to get things going, to start getting auditions and this, that, and the other. I found that that was actually easier for me, but I had also kind of just come out of the more difficult journey of formatting Word documents and uploading them and then going through the quality checks with Kindle Direct Publishing. So I was already kind of accustomed to a more painful experience over there. So when I came over to ACX, one, I already had my manuscript ready to upload, which is, if I remember, okay, all I really had to do was to provide one, like a small little sample. And then after that, it was to provide the actual manuscript for the narrator once I chose one. And so that brings me back to speaking even more specifically to the process. So I'm a process engineer at my current job. And so I see the world through process, right? Like steps and what's, you know, what comes first, then next, and how long does it take, and do they flow to each other? I found that it was extremely efficient that ACX, after you get the account set up, comes in and the way that they present their site, the way that they present their instructions was very seamless and easy. And specifically the instructions for the short paragraph to get auditions on, I liked how it said, pick a scene where there's multiple characters with multiple inflections, you know, something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what ACX's words were anymore, but it helped me find a scene in my book that I could grab an excerpt from. So that way I could really get a good bearing on the narrator, the person auditioning, and be able to say, okay, well, yeah, he can jump from character to character. He can switch the flavor. He can go up and down in tone. You know, he can act it, right? Because that's what I was kind of looking for was, can this guy act my book out, right? Can this guy or gal act my book? And I didn't realize that I needed to audition for that, or I needed to seek auditions for that until ACX provided that instruction to me. And so that was a huge kudos to them in that process of getting set up and starting asking for auditions.
Okay. And did you post the compatibility code as a royalty share project or as a finished hour project?
I did finished hour project because the whole royalty thing felt scary to me. Like, I mean, what if I went crazy big, like the Twilight series or something, you know, and then I had this guy always leeching on me for my money, right? Versus, hey, just a one-time payment, let's agree to this amount, and then you're out of my life type of deal. So as far as risk tolerance goes, I chose the finished per hour rate, and I went with the lowest. Well, I don't know if it's lowest. I can't remember what the lowest is anymore, but I did 50. I did 50 per hour is what I chose.
Okay, and once you posted your audition on ACX, then how long did it take for the auditions to start rolling in?
You know, Greg, I don't remember the, you know, specifically days or anything like that, but I do remember being a little impatient. I was like, you know, I don't got anything coming in, boo, you know, like I was all, but I'm also like a very fast-paced person. those that know me would say, yeah, Tyler moves twice as fast as a normal person does. So while at one hand I said, oh, this is taking a while, that was just my own personal measure. I'm pretty sure that I had an audition within probably a week or two, which to a normal person's acceptance rate probably was okay or fast. But, you know, I threw it out there and I was expecting to get something within hours or a day or two, and that's not really what happened.
Okay. About how many auditions did you get in total? Do you remember?
So recorded auditions, I got two. I had three total people reach out to me, but the third was like well after I was already going with somebody else.
Okay.
And that wasn't even an audition. The third was not an audition. It was just a reach out saying, hey, are you still seeking an audition? Of course, I declined and said no.
Yeah, you'd already picked somebody at that point. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So, that's one thing that we don't know as narrators is when we submit, does the author get four auditions? Does he get 40 auditions? Does he get 100 auditions? You know, we don't know. And it's fascinating for me to find out that you got so few. I figured, you know, you're doing per finished hour as opposed to royalty share. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a surprise. But so I guess you listened to all the auditions. Were they all good? Were they equal quality? Was one better than the other? Or how did you make the decision to choose the narrator that you chose?
So what I did was I listened to each one of them. And in my mind, one was better than the other. One of them had a really, really cool British accent. And I listened to a lot of books. So my mind went to a Clive Cussler book that I had listened to that had a British guy narrating it. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I would love to have something like that for my book. And then the other guy was a little bit more flat and monotone and was clearly less experienced than the British accent gentleman. But what I have always found in my life is to try and help those trying to build experience. So between me and my co-author, who, you know, we kind of shared equal decision-making rights, we evaluated that. We said, yeah, the British one might sound cooler, but let's give the other guy a chance to build experience, right, and give him feedback so he can get better, because he obviously was just kind of starting out. And so that's how we chose him, which I would argue was the lesser of two quality options. But I think in the end, we were still satisfied and happy with it because he received our feedback and adjusted to it. And that's the best you can ask for somebody, especially when they're just starting out.
And we'll talk about feedback. Was there an ongoing feedback process? How did you communicate with the narrator while he was recording? Was it a chapter at a time, or how did all that process work? And how did you communicate with him? Was it email, phone? How was all that going?
Sure. So interesting enough, the gentleman I selected was, he actually lives in the Philippines. So in addition to just being new to all this together, we also had a time zone issue. So our feedback loop had a little bit of a delay in it because, you know, he's several hours behind or ahead of us, depending on how you look at the glass.
Yeah, I think it's about 12 hours, if I remember right.
Yeah. So it's, it was a significant time delay. So, you know what, I would send feedback and I would just sit because I knew that, you know, he was probably sleeping. It was 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that. But once he was on, he immediately got it and would apply the feedback. Now, the way that we communicated was we communicated through the ACX messaging tool. So nothing went through text messaging or emails. Although I'm sure we probably could have done that, but I think because of that time zone thing, it just felt more natural just to kind of go through the ACX platform versus, hey, you live in Texas and I live in Louisiana, so let's just text each other. It's faster. It just felt, I don't know, it just chose ACX versus other options.
Right. And were you able to discuss pronunciations and character voices and overall approach through the ACX communication platform?
Yeah, we were. So, I mean, like I said, none of it was audio. Like, we didn't talk. So it was all email, basically, but, you know, through the ACX platform. And so, yeah, we pinged back and forth on inflections and how he was narrating each character, right? That was our first round of feedback was, you know, hey, Joseph, which is the main character, you know, he's, in our minds as authors, this is the person, real life person that we were thinking of, right? And so we would give him an actual person that he could go research and see how they talk, right? And then for the bad guy, we were like, it's this guy over here, this real life person, go research him. So that way he had something to see and hear and listen so he could kind of mimic a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, me just telling him, hey, I want you to sound like a gruff Marine, like, I mean, what do I define as gruff Marine versus him, right? Whereas if I could go in there and say, hey, I want you to, you know, to look and sound like The Rock or something, then that's an easy orientation for him, and he can try and mimic that type of character.
Right, and I remember deep into the book, one of the characters, one of the older characters, it said something about he responded in a gruff voice or something like that, and I got to thinking, yeah, you know, that's the kind of thing that a narrator needs to be aware of. There's a nightmare story about some guy who spent hours and hours and hours narrating an audiobook in a regular voice, and he got down to about page 350, and the main character replied in their British accent.
Oh, no.
And he had to go back and redo the whole thing, you know. So the guidance that you provided your narrator is excellent. You know, I'm looking for this, and I'm looking for that. And so that's really excellent that you did that, and I'm sure he was very appreciative about that.
Yeah, and I have to throw a bone to ACX, because when I was doing my research, it was either in ACX or some other platform that told me, hey, you know, in that first round, and I'm pretty positive it was in ACX, in that first round when you get that audition back and you provide that first round of feedback, or maybe even it's in the first round of feedback for the actual book that he starts narrating, you've got to lay out what the characters are supposed to be like, because for that very reason that you just described, like, I mean, it's a two-way street. Like, I'm paying for it, right? But he's investing time into it, right? That he could be on a different book or somewhere else. So let's not, you know, it's a mutual agreement. Let's not waste each other's time. Let's set those expectations clear up front. And somewhere in my research, I got that feedback. And so that's why I actually went about that route. I didn't come up with it on my own, as smart as I like to think I am. I didn't come up with it on my own. But ACX, I'm pretty sure, is what kind of directed me towards that type of feedback.
All right. And how did your perception of how a book gets narrated change during this process? Did you have any assumptions about audiobook narration going in that you learned later on it doesn't really work that way? How did all that work out?
I think that my assumption was like, oh, hey, I'm going to be like watching him read or narrate my book in his little booth, and then like on the spot giving him feedback on each time he, you know, reads a scene or something like that. So I always think I had this assumption in my head that it was a little bit more collaborative and in real time. But I think that's driven just from, you know, Hollywood, and when you see recording artists and you got the publisher and the director, you know, in that little booth with all those billion switches and stuff in it. So in my head, I had that, right, which was a wrong assumption, because how are you going to do that, right, with somebody halfway across the world or even one state away or whatever. So once I was immersed to the actual industry, I was like, oh, okay, well, that behavior of being able to give feedback back and forth is still there. It just isn't me and him in a room or over a phone call providing instant feedback. It's more of a back and forth ping type of feedback.
Right. And how did it feel as a first time author to kind of let your baby go into this narrator's hands?
I didn't really have any apprehensions or feel any risk associated with it. As a matter of fact, I was more excited than anything just to kind of see how it would come out from a different person's voice and perspective. You know, as an author, there's a method for editing your books or just becoming a better writer is to read it back to yourself, right? So you write your book or you write a chapter and then you read it back to yourself. And when you read something out loud, it flows a different way, it sounds a different way, the grammar is different, right? And so you catch those types of errors there. And so while I fully intended to have this book published, I also in the back of my head was like, you know what, if this guy just completely fails, it's worth my time to invest in him reading it to me and then me making my edits to it and then just abandoning the audio version and just going with a better edited print and electronic version. So I had a very low risk tolerance, or high, I don't know which way you go with that, but the point is that I was completely okay with him taking my baby and reading it to me because I had kind of alternative backup motives for him reading it to me. So it wasn't so much of a like, oh, this guy's going to completely ruin it and ruin it when it gets out published into the real world, because I always had the control to say, I'm not going to go, I'm still going to pay him, but I'm not going to have to put this out on the market, right?
And that's fascinating what you said about the author reading your book back out loud. after you've written it. We see that a lot, especially in nonfiction books. They read, you know, with the eye just fine, but you go try to read it out loud and it just doesn't hang right. And
yeah.
So that's a neat insight that we as narrators, you know, we don't see that kind of thing. And that's, yeah. I think that's good advice for all of us, really.
Yep.
You know, read your emails out loud before you send them.
Oh, geez. Tell me about it. In my main job, that if only I could do that.
All right. Well, Tyler, it's been a real joy to get to talk to you. Once again, I've been talking with Tyler Dahl. He's the author of the novel, The Compatibility Code. It's a real page turner if you get the paper version, and it's a real exciting listen if you get the audiobook version. And I guess, I don't know what term you use if you're using the screen on Kindle, but it's a great book and I think a very, very, very good first novel. And you've got some more stuff in the works, and we will certainly be on the lookout for that. Any dates or guesses of when the next things will come out?
Yeah, sure. So first I want to give a shout out to my co-author, Curtis Lee. I honestly don't know if I would have gone all the way through with it if I didn't pick up the whole synergy thing with him. So definitely want to give him some credit on that. Was definitely a mutual project, and he did an amazing job helping me out and tag teaming the book. As far as upcoming projects, so I've got a novelette. It's a really small novelette on rideshare. So writing a firsthand experience on being a rideshare driver. So that's a really fun and exciting one. I took a completely different spin. And it's just me and my raw thoughts, kind of thrown out there. So it's a little bit more aggressive and abrasive, narration, but, for those that are interested in seeing the life from a rideshare driver's perspective, check that out. I expect to have that done and hopefully published, self-published by summer of 2018. And then my other project that I'm working on, which would, probably be end of 2018, maybe beginning 2019, is a, spy adventure book. That is laced with all kinds of mysterious stuff, and it's tied in with current events from the last 50 years and all of your major, like, terrorism events and government big agencies and who's the driving force behind that, and then taking down that driving force. So it should be a fun, exciting read.
All right. Well, it sounds like you've got a couple of good works in the pipeline. We'll be on the lookout for that. Tyler, thank you very much for allowing us to peek behind the curtain and see what it looks like from the author's point of view when working through ACX. You've told us a whole lot of things that we didn't know as audiobook narrators, and certainly appreciate that. Thank you again for your time and all your insight, and hope you have a great day.
All right. Thank you, too. Take care, Greg.
You too. Bye-bye.